Dermot and Dave.
Conversation, crack,
and the music you love.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Today FM.
Now imagine going into hospital for back pain and finding out it was something completely different. Well, this week is Palliative Care Week, and to tell us more about the important work that the people who provide palliative care do, we're joined by Aisling McConnell from Dublin. Aisling was diagnosed with cancer back in 2019, and she's on the phone now. Hi Aisling, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling great today.
Good.
Today's a good day.
Is that how it works? You have good days, bad days, and you kind of don't know till you open your eyes?
Exactly. Well, you know, that can happen at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock. This morning it was 6 o'clock in the morning.
Is that a lie-in then?
Too bad. That's a lie-in, yeah.
Right.
That's a lie-in.
Do you just get used to having broken sleep? Is that part of it?
Yeah. You sleep. I'm tired a lot during the day as well. You know, I'd nap a lot during the day too.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, look, let's find out why that would be the case. Will you take us back in time and, I suppose, bring us through your journey of this whole situation you find yourself in?
Okay, yeah. Well, in 2019, in January 2019, I found a lump on my breast and I went to the hospital and they just said it was a cyst. They didn't give me a mammogram. So in March of 2019, so 3 months later, I found another lump and I went back to the hospital and they, again, didn't give me a mammogram, but just told me it was cysts and sent me home. So come June, July that year, I was starting to have a bit of back pain. I was very uncomfortable. And in August, I'd had enough. I was starting a new job up in the airport, and I went for a uniform fitting, and I came out of the uniform fitting, and I said, right, that's it now. I'm going to go up and see about this back problem I have before I start this new job. And went into the hospital and pretty much refused to leave until they found out what it was, which it turned out to be 3 days later, and that I had had breast cancer, and that they'd missed it, and it had progressed to my spine. So I had three tumours in my spine. And
did you think you knew at some part of all of this, Aisling, at some time that you just knew in yourself something wasn't right?
I knew something wasn't right. I never for 1 minute thought it was cancer.
Yeah.
Never for 1 minute. It didn't cross my mind. It was when I was in the hospital, one of the doctors in A&E said to me, have you ever had breast cancer before? And I said, no. And he said, are you sure? I said, well, I think that's something I'd remember. He said, right. So he admitted me because I was in awful pain with the back. So he admitted me that day and they thought it was rheumatism. The doctor there, she came to me and she said, look, I'm going to be honest with you. We're going to start from cancer and we're going to work our way down the list.
How was it to receive that news?
At the time, I wasn't too shocked. It hadn't kind of set in. I think I was more curious about what exactly was wrong with me. So, of course, I got on good old Google and Googled my symptoms, and it turned out that, came out that it was bone cancer. So before they actually confirmed it was cancer, bone cancer and breast cancer, stage 4, we pretty much knew, we were prepared. So having the doctor say it, and, you know, he apologised for having missed it, and which was, you know, feck all use to me now, I can say.
Mm. Were you angry?
Yeah, I was. Very. Yeah.
And
still am.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, you must still feel anger that this was, I mean, it wasn't a short period of time from when you first presented with the telltale sign of a lump on your breast until you find out that you've not only got breast cancer, but it's progressed.
Yeah, because I figured they could have saved me in January if they had just given me the mammogram.
We've spoken to people who've gone through a cancer diagnosis before, and a lot of them speak about the shock of the diagnosis and then not really being able to take anything in after they hear the word cancer from the doctor. But it sounds to me like you were in a different place headspace-wise.
Yeah, we were. You know, I mean, I still shed a tear because he was apologising so much, and I was like, you know, it was more angry tears that I was shedding because I wanted to say something badly to him, you know, but I kind of restrained myself. because there was nothing I could do at that stage. There's, you know, it's there, and I just had to accept the help that was given to me from them. So, you know, it wasn't a state of shock. We went home, we talked about it, we cried a bit, you know, and then we have a daughter as well, so it was breaking the news to her as soon as we had the diagnosis ourselves, you know, as soon as we knew, we had to figure out how to tell her.
And what age is your daughter?
She was 14 at the time. She's nearly 16 now.
Mm. Not an easy conversation to have.
Not an easy conversation, no. But she took it very well. She took it very well. And has done, you know, throughout the whole experience. She's been great. Like, you know, she's not broken down. She says she has some nights where she'd shed a little tear, but she'd never let me see that.
When you get the diagnosis, what's the next thing that happens then? I mean, are you sent home? Are you admitted to hospital? What happens?
I was sent home, and I got crippling pain in my back, and I couldn't move, and I called the ambulance. I'll never forget it, because it was actually on my daughter's birthday, and I called the ambulance, and the ambulance man couldn't move me out of the sitting room, because I was so crippled with pain. They had to drug me up to my eyeballs before they could get me into a chair. Wow. To get me into the ambulance then. And that was then. I spent 5 weeks in hospital trying to get the pain under control, trying different drugs and different methods of medication. So it was 5 weeks then before I could actually leave hospital.
Where did St. Francis Hospice come into it then?
Well, they came into it. They contacted me in the hospital. And they said that they'd do a home call to me, a home visit to me. So when I came home, they were pretty much on the ball. They came the next day, and they explained all my medication to me, because you can imagine I was on tons of medication, and there was have this one at this time of the day with food, have another one at a different time of the day without food. You know, it was all very confusing. But they organized a thing called a blister pack for me. Which is just the chemist actually do up all your tablets for you in a little like a pill box, and you get that weekly. So St. Francis organised that for me, and they brought me over, and they did alternative therapy on me as well, and just basically told me that, you know, whenever I needed them, they were there. If ever there was pain, they liaised a lot with my doctor, and they liaised a lot with my chemist. So if ever there was any change or tweak in my medication, you know, I didn't have to go through all these weird names on medication or anything like that. I literally just rocked up to the chemist and got my new pills, and that was it, you know?
And when we hear, like, you know, the name hospice, and when you hear the term palliative care, a lot of people immediately...
It's frightening.
Frightening, and they just go to end-of-life scenarios, and they just go, right, where you go when you've got, you know, a month to live or whatever. But isn't there a misconception about palliative care? Palliative care is to help people live their lives.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I had that vision as well, you know, tubes sticking out of me, no hair, end of life. You know, that's what palliative care meant to me. It's so much more than that. It's so much more. I mean, I did, during COVID there, they did Zoom calls with us, and I did a peer group session with them, which was exercise, helping me with, you know, strengthening my arms and my legs and stuff like that. They did that for about 6 weeks. Online with us, and it was great because you got to see other people online as well going through the same thing as yourself.
It sounds like the hospice is, and the palliative care that they offer is really support in the truest sense of the word, that you have a feeling that they've got your back. They're helping you with the daily task, like your pills, just to take elements of confusion out of it. They're explaining stuff to you, and then they're hooking you into a network of people who can offer you support in a different way. That's got to be a very powerful addition to your whole healing process.
Oh, it's invaluable. It's invaluable to me. You know, I couldn't have gone through this journey without them. I really couldn't, because it's so scary as well, you know, when you don't know what's happening to you, to have someone come calmly and explain to you, you know, what the next step is in different areas of the illness, you know, and how to move forward. And it's always moving forward with them. It's never going back. You know, it's everything is a forward step, a confidence, like giving you confidence to go on with your day.
You can tell from talking to you, you know, not only just the way you speak and, you know, what you've been doing in the past, you're a very active person. You're very mentally active and physically active, I'm guessing, in previous days. What is it like now, say Peter is out at work, you're at home by yourself, how do you deal with that change in your levels of activity and that social connection you would have got from that?
Oh, it's so boring. That's the only way I can describe it. It's really, really boring. You know, I have a very close relationship with the TV. There's not much I can do, you know. Peter comes home from work and maybe we go to the shops, you know, something like that. That's just those little outings if I'm able for them, you know. It's getting up in the morning. I need help getting dressed. I need help getting undressed. I can only move my arms to a certain level. You know, I rely on people. I rely on people a lot to help out with the thing. One of the things I will say is I went to Germany for 2 weeks for alternative treatment over there. And I honest to God think that saved my life.
All right, tell us about that. So what type of treatment did you get in Germany?
I got alternative treatment. I got a variety of infusion treatments just to boost my immune system and to kind of fight the cancer cells.
And how did you feel coming back from Germany then?
So coming back from Germany, I'd been originally given 2.5 years from the doctors in Beaumont. And now I'm at 2 years. And honest to God, I'm not going anywhere in the next 6 months, you know. So and I put that down to Germany.
Your attitude is really positive. I mean, I know you're planning a week in Lanzarote as well, aren't you, next month?
Yeah, I'm going over with a friend. She's some first aid training. So she's coming over with me and we're going to go over there for a week. Yeah, that's, just have like, a bit of sun scene.
For someone who may be going through a similar diagnosis as yourself or, you know, just dealing with chronic pain or any of those things, to hear that you're able to get yourself on a plane and go to Lanzarote for a holiday is amazing.
I'm not going to say it's going to be easy, you know, because I know from beforehand, before any of this, my legs used to swell anyway with flying. Mm. So I can't wait to see the size of them after I get off the plane from Lanzarote. It's going to be tree trunks big time for the whole
some
week.
Lymphatic drainage, all right, yeah,
exactly,
fairness.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, look,
yeah.
It is palliative care week this week, and that's why we're talking to you. And I think your story, Aisling, it just gives people a sense of how important the work the palliative care teams do and that it isn't, you know, as we said before, it isn't this thing that maybe we all perceive it as just for the last days of life. It's to make people live their lives to the best of their abilities.
Yeah, they're absolute angels. That's all I can describe them as, absolute angels.
Aisling, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. We hope that your healing journey continues in such a positive direction. And I think just everybody can feel your positivity today. And we're right behind you. So have a great day. Thank you for chatting to us today. And best of luck
with
everything.
Thanks for having me.
See you, Aisling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dermot and Dave. Weekdays from 9 a.m. Today.